Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Times Red Box podcast. I'm Luke Jones. I'm about 5 minutes away from home. I was so thrilled to hand back the programme to Matt Chorley, who'll be back this week, you'll be pleased to know, that I left the office, was out recording the podcast. So here I am on my phone on my way home, and there's absolutely loads of great stuff on the program today. We were talking about 2019. If you think today's politics seems a bit angry, a bit fraught, cast your mind back 2 years to the general election of 2019. We'll hear from some winners and losers from that on what they think that did to our politics at the time and also now. So we'll hear from them later on. But first, our fantastic columnists from The Times, Melanie Reid, and from The Daily Mail, John Stevens. Melanie, let's start with you. First of all, this story on the front of the Times, which we were talking about with Steve Swinford, the political editor of The Times, earlier. It looks like all of this business with Downing Street flats and the rest is cutting through to the public. The Conservatives have slumped to their worst poll rating in 11 months.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? It reminds me at the moment of nothing more than the Trump White House. You know, it's a sort of this, every day there's a fresh chaos, a fresh bit of chaos, a fresh bit of breaking news. Something else has gone wrong. I mean, it's only 3 days since the story from Downing Street about the Downing Street is involved in rescuing cats and dogs from Afghan, but it feels like 6 months ago. You know, it's that sense of do you realise that Boris Johnson has sucked us all into his chaotic life? I mean, just like Trump. I mean, it's actually quite remarkable, I think.
Melanie, how does, in terms of the actual scandals themselves, how does this sit with you? I mean, we've got the situation with the Downing Street flat above number 11 where Boris Johnson and his wife live, and who paid for that refurb back in the headlines. Then also the question about the parties. Do those agitate you in of themselves?
Well, me personally, I've always been a great a Johnson skeptic, but I think it's interesting because, as Steve Swinford was saying earlier, I think there is this cut through now, because you can't disrespect people. You cannot disrespect the electorate. And that's what's starting to happen, that cut through. And I think that he's fighting now on so many fronts, and there's so many big, big challenges coming up. You know, the quite aside from North Shropshire, which I think will just be entertainment because they'll get that. But it's the facts like, the NHS performance, that 6 million people on the waiting list. In January, we imagine 12 hours wait at A&E. This is what, the fact that you can only tell so many lies before people turn around and say, come on, you really are, you really are doing it for us now. So it's too many unforced errors. I mean, the other thing, like, he spent at least £140,000 on redecorating the Downing Street flat. Do you know that that buys a nice house in many parts of the country? And ordinary people, it gets to the point where they really don't like it. They think they're being the mahia's being taken out of them.
And in fact, it was Jeff on text just saying, when did the phrase cut through start to cut through? I seem to hear it 100 times a day now. John, on this question of cutting through, I think we've got you back on a better line now. This poll on the front of the Times, the Conservatives were their worst poll rating in 11 months. Can we put this down to the scandals that we've been hearing about in the past few days? Or is this, as Melanie says, also other things to do with, you know, like hospital waiting times and the rest?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've seen that the ratings for Tories have gone down in the last few weeks, particularly also in Paterson. We saw a dip and they have seemed to come back again. I think the problem for Labour, though, is it's mostly that the Tory rating is going down rather than people are switching to Labour. And I think Keir Starmer now needs to set out what he wants to do and how he do things differently so that you don't just get people sitting on their hands and not going to vote at all.
Yes. And in terms of the immediate, the nearest thing where that time where that will be tested, the North Shropshire by-election next week, is there going to be a shock twist there?
Well, it's looking like the Liberal Democrats are going to do well in that. But, you know, we quite enjoy by-elections. It's a bit of election drama that kind of spices up quite a month. But, I mean, we can't really usually read too much into polls. But I think into by-election polls, but I think it's going to feed into that mood next week that it's going to be a tricky week for the Tories. You're going to have MPs spend the weekend in their constituencies, probably hearing from voters that they're quite annoyed about what's gone on in the last week. Then you're going to have that difficult vote on Tuesday on these regulations when we expect that there are going to be a big revolt of Tory MPs. And then you're going to have this by-election. I think Boris Johnson is going to be very keen to break up for Christmas and find some way to reset his government in the new year.
What about resignations, John? We've had Jack Doyle, the Prime Minister's Director of Communications, photographed in the papers, on the news websites and the rest. We've already had Alex Stratton go. Ed Oldfield being chased by a Sky News camera yesterday, another communications advisor. Are more heads going to roll?
Well, I think possibly. And I think the government needs to get on with this investigation that they've ordered from Simon Case. I think usually you set up that sort of probe if you want to take the immediate heat out of a row and then throw it into the long grass. But I just think Downing Street just need to kill this story now. And how you do that is get back the results of this investigation and then work out, do you need some people to go? We know in general that Boris Johnson is quite reluctant to let his people go, but I think in this case he's going to be quite ruthless because he's clearly fighting to keep hold of control of the Tory party.
Melanie, do you think that helps with the public discussion about this and the public anger? Does that undercut some of the anger if people see this person or that person who was attending whatever party in Downing Street actually go outside their house like Allegra Stratton did, full of tears, and resign?
Well, she acted with honour. It would be refreshing to see more people act with honour and do the same thing, because it would please the public. I think that it would draw a line under it to some extent. Because it would restore a certain bit of integrity. The boss man isn't going to resign, so the minions can be sent out to resign. I think it would be healthy for Downing Street to do that for themselves.
And is there a sense as well, John, I don't want to necessarily draw you into anything, but in terms of people like Ed Oldfield, in terms of people like Jack Doyle, in terms of people like Allegra Stratton, in the case of this scandal, they could have done something wrong. That's one side of this. They could have, you know, attended a party or been, you know, videoed laughing about a party. They've also, some of them have been involved in the communications around the fallout of it and have handled it badly. So not only are they involved in the actual mishap in the first place, they're then involved with the poor communications around it afterwards. They're surely heading for the door on those two counts, aren't they?
Well, I think that's also why they're finding it so difficult to respond, because they're not talking about a minister in a different department. They're trying to work out a strategy which involves something that some of them have done themselves. I think that's quite hard. But I think you do need to see a bit of a reset inside the Downing Street operation. You're hearing more and more from Tory MPs who feel stuff like this was completely unforced. There would have been a much better way to have dealt with it. You go back to Owen Paterson, and it was quite clear from the report that came out about him that he needed to go or be suspended at least. And Boris Johnson didn't do it. So I think there's been repeatedly mistake after mistake after mistake. And you start to question, how good are these people advising Boris Johnson? And do you need kind of new talent coming into Downing Street to get things back on the right track?
Let's move on to...
It would help, wouldn't it, if they actually admitted that it was a party rather than sort of dancing around the dancing on a pinhead about it. You know, that would clear the air too.
Would it, John?
Well, I think if they admit it's a party, then they really are in trouble. Obviously, we'll see what Simon Case does. But I think if it turns out it was a party, people got invites saying, come to this party, I think then you're going to have to start seeing people who sent out the invites getting sacked and people who attended getting warnings or suspensions.
Let's move on to other parties. In Scotland, people have been urged to cancel their Christmas parties because of course, rising cases of the Omicron COVID variant. Public Health Scotland saying that a number of outbreaks of Omicron have been linked to Christmas parties and steps, of course. Let's not forget that. Where are both of you with Christmas parties? Are you cancelling things? Are you slowly withdrawing from sociable life as we draw closer to Christmas, Melanie?
Well, I feel a bit sorry for our local community pub, which needs all the help it can get, and like the rest of UK hospitality, isn't particularly happy at this. But, you know, we're supposed to be having a sort of worst Christmas jumper party on the 18th, and I don't know whether it's going to be cancelled or not. But that debate is going to be taking place right across the country. In Scotland, I think we're far more cautious. We've been at Plan B ever since August. We've never stopped wearing masks. We have vaccine passports. There hasn't been a revolution up here. Everyone's just got on with it. We have worked from home wherever possible. So, it's not that hard. It will be. I do feel very much, though, for the hospitality industry.
John, what about you? Are you strategically pulling out of parties and gatherings and things like that, thinking save Christmas?
Well, most of the ones I've been meaning to go to have actually been cancelled for me, so I've not had a chance. I mean, Rishi Sunak was meant to be having journalists into Number 11 on Monday night, but quite understandably, he's maybe thought that's not the best look in the circumstances.
That would have been tense.
Yeah, I think Downing Street actually penciled in a date for journalists' drinks last week, but obviously thought, ooh, I'm not sure this is ideal timing for that. But I think... I mean, I had COVID a few weeks ago, so don't really have the fear of getting COVID at a party and then having it at Christmas. So I think if I hadn't have had COVID, then I think I would be thinking, is it worth drinking this kind of not very nice wine with these people who are slightly annoying, with the risk of then not being able to see my family? But because I have had COVID quite recently, I think, it's not so much a risk, it's fine.
You're bursting with antibodies.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Melanie, how much, how helpful do you think it is people's own behaviour in this? You talked about the situation in Scotland, where obviously there are vaccine passports and lots more mask wearing. There are some rule changes coming into effect in England today. But how good do you think the public is at self-regulating, of seeing what's happening in the headlines in terms of case numbers and worries about hospitalisations, and actually altering their behaviour themselves?
Well, the Scots are pretty good at it. They are much more cautious. I mean, Nicola Sturgeon is going to be speaking this afternoon, in which she may order us to cancel all these things. But I think there's a much more, there's just a sense of kind of, okay, let's be sensible about this. We seem to lack that rather angry anti-authoritarianism, the anti-mask, anti-vaxxy thing, which does rather characterise parts of England. So, you know, it's interesting, the psychology between the two countries.
Just finally, John, tell us about your alpaca.
This is Geronimo. This is an alpaca who tested positive for TB in two tests back in 2017, and he was on death row ever since then, with a battle going on. his own old lady called Helen MacDonald, who's in South Gloucestershire. She's gone through the court. She's had several appeals trying to stop the Department for Food and Rural Affairs from putting down the alpaca. She like eventually lost that battle in August. She had the police turn up on her farm, forcibly take away this alpaca to be killed. But now they've done a series of post-mortem results, and it actually turns out they can't find any traces of TB, which is quite embarrassing for the government.
They can't find any traces of TB in Geronimo. How furious is his owner, Helen, who was always popping up on, well, Times Radio and any airways?
So I think she's really upset. I spoke to her briefly yesterday, and I mean, I know it all seems like a bit of a funny story, and we all quite enjoyed it in August when, certainly the first half of August, there wasn't much news around, but she is still quite upset about it, and she feels she's been wrong. So she's talking about the possibility of taking legal action against the government. I'm not sure this story's come to an end yet.
John Stevens and Melanie Reed. I'm Luke Jones. This is the Times Red Box podcast. I'm almost home. Sorry for forgetting to do the podcast while I was in the office. Up next, the election of 2019.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for this.
There is only one way to get Brexit done in the face of this unrelenting parliamentary obstructionism. This endless, willful, fingers crossed, not me, Gov refusal to deliver on the mandate of the people, and that is, Mr. Speaker, to refresh this Parliament and give the people a choice.
Boris and I have a great friendship. We've become friends. Boris and I, when he was running, they were saying, he's the Trump. You know, we have a lot of the same things going, I guess. But I think it was time for Boris. It was time. You needed him.
Obviously very sad at the result we've achieved and very sad at those colleagues that lost their seats in the election, and very sad for many people in this country who will now have a government that is continuing policies of austerity, and many of the poorest communities, I think, will suffer very badly.
We did it! We pulled it off, didn't we? We pulled it off, and in this glorious, glorious pre-breakfast moment, before a new dawn rises on a new day and a new government, I want to congratulate absolutely everybody involved in securing the biggest Conservative majority since the 1980s.
So there we go. That was the situation 2 years ago. The Conservatives winning the 2019 election, that December election, with a massive 80-seat majority. Boris Johnson there with his Get Brexit Done agenda at peak popularity, I guess you could say, at the time. All seems a long while ago now, especially when you look at the front page of the Times this morning. Poll blow for Tories as trust in Johnson falls. We're going to look back at what happened around 2019 at that election and how it has changed since, as we loom, of course, closer and closer to yet another election. Live with us this morning, battle-weary veterans of that 2019 fight, David Gawk, former Conservative Cabinet Minister, of course, who split from his party over Brexit and then stood in that election as an independent. David, welcome.
Good morning.
Richard Tice, chair of the Brexit Party, now Reform Party, who in that election stood in Hartlepool. Welcome along.
Good morning.
Mary Cray is the former Labour MP for Wakefield in Yorkshire. She lost her seat in 2019. Mary, good to have you this morning.
Good morning.
I've also got Richard Holden, the Conservative MP for North West Durham, who upset the odds to beat Labour's Laura Piddock, of course, part of that crumbling red wall. Richard, welcome along.
Good morning.
Thank you all so much for being here and for making time for us. When we look back at 2019, I guess we sort of see it as being an especially vicious election in the way it was campaigned, quite a turning point as well in terms of the result. I wonder how you all see it 2 years on. David, if I could start with you.
Well, I think it was a confirmation of a change in the nature of the Conservative Party. I think the Conservative Party became, if you like, much more like the Brexit Party, and that worked very well for it electorally. And I have to, you know, I have to say that I didn't like the strategy that was pursued. I didn't think it was good for the country, and that's still my view. But clearly, it delivered an overall majority. I think that is bad for the country in the long term. I think the Conservative Party is fundamentally transformed and not for the better. But it was significant because it was the transformation of the Conservative Party. The other thing I would say about that election was really how crucial Jeremy Corbyn was to that result. And I do think the British people were left with a pretty dreadful choice between Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson. And in the end, they chose what they saw as the lesser of two evils.
Richard, would you agree with that, having been the Brexit Party candidate in that election?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with David in one sense. It was an extraordinary election, and the choice of Jeremy Corbyn for the nation was a terrible choice. Obviously, in your panel today, three of us lost. You know, we lost our respective seats. It was a difficult. It was quite a vicious election. It was the first election I had fought in, but it was a confirmation of what the people wanted to happen when they voted in 2016. Bizarre, though, actually, because 2 years ago, when I campaigned in Hartlepool, within six or seven doors, I knew that Jeremy Corbyn was a massive problem for the Labour Party. Lifelong Labour voters saying they'd never vote again whilst Corbyn was in charge. 2 years later, I've just finished a by-election campaign in Bexley, South East London, and you've got the complete reverse, where I've now got lifelong Tory voters saying they'll never vote Tory again whilst Boris Johnson is leading. So it is an extraordinary period in politics, and that was a momentous election back in 2019.
And Mary Craig, what about you? I think 2 days before polling day, I was in your constituency talking to people, going into various pubs and things, and I don't know if you felt the same, but there was fury, that there were some really, really angry people about what you and what your party was doing, especially in terms of Brexit. How do you reflect on that now?
Well, I think the election was basically a rupture in the kind of post-war consensus. The kind of moderate wings of both parties, if you like, and David perhaps represents the moderate wing of the Conservative Party, me, the moderate wing of the Labour Party, saw that, you know, our type of politics, our values were roundly rejected in favour of a very quick and easy slogan, get Brexit done, which subsequently proved to be much harder and much more difficult. And we're still getting Brexit done. The Prime Minister seems surprised that Articles is talking about triggering Article 16 and didn't know what the Northern Ireland Protocol entailed. So Brexit will never be done. But I think it was the breakdown of that that sort of post-war consensus. And I think it's interesting that, you know, Richard's Tice's comments about, you know, on the doorsteps of Bexley. Jeremy Corbyn was initially elected by to be the leader by the Labour Party, a strand of the Labour left. And he did well, to everybody's surprise, in the 2017 election. But the wheels had come off the Corbyn bus by 2019. I think Johnson is following the same trajectory. You know, he could reach the parts of Britain that other Conservative parties couldn't reach, Bassett Law, Bolsover, Bolton. And yet now here he is leading a government that is dogged by scandal and mired in sleaze.
But Mary, just stay in 2019 for us, if you would, and December 2019. Just give us a sense of what it was like for you door knocking at that time.
I was talking to lifelong Labour voters, people on council estates, who were saying to me, we will not vote Labour as long as Corbyn is in charge. There was a huge push on social media from veterans who felt that Jeremy's position on security, was inimical to the country's safety, the whole Skripal scandal and the, you know, asking if we could send a sample to the Russians to see if they provide the chemical weapon or not. I mean, this kind of ludicrous position that we found ourselves in as a party, and I hope the Labour Party never finds itself in that position again, a country that cannot be trusted, where voters feel they cannot trust the Labour Party with their security and with the economy. And I think the whole Brexit thing, let's not forget we'd had, by 2016, 6 years of austerity, cuts to schools, cuts to hospitals, massive cuts to local government, cuts that Mrs. Thatcher would have only dreamed of, a 25% cut to local government. And people were told this was the fault of immigrants. They were told that the country was full, we couldn't, there was no more money for schools, no more money for hospitals. And the Conservatives really have failed, I think, to fix the roof while the sun was shining. And guess what? Brexit has not increased the number of school places, it has not fixed our hospitals, and it has not fixed the state of local government either.
But Richard Holden, you were a beneficiary in many ways in terms of what happened in 2019. You're now the MP for North West Durham. You won it then. Tell us about your experience as you got closer to polling day, knocking on the door. Were you hearing similar things in terms of frustrations with Jeremy Corbyn?
I was definitely hearing that. I was also hearing issues around Brexit and a feel of sort of the Labour Party and weren't respecting the democratic view of the people. I mean, mine wasn't the most Brexity area of the country either. Mm. You know, voted 5-45. But I think there was actually something more underlying for Labour, which I don't think they've even now recognised, which is that I think for a very, very long time, a lot of these areas had been perhaps moving away or voting Labour more increasingly reluctantly because Labour doesn't reflect their values. And I don't think that's changed under the more recent leadership of Keir Starmer. I think it looks like a very London-centric party, which doesn't really reflect the, you know, the views of people in constituencies like mine in North West Durham or Consort, where I'm sitting at the moment. And I think that's a broader issue that the Labour Party, it's quite easy to pin it on the Brexit referendum for them. It's quite easy to pin it all on Corbyn, even though we know in 17 he'd done all right. You know, but I think there's a much bigger long-term issue for Labour in that broader realignment of politics, which I don't think they yet understand.
We're looking back on the 2019 general election and the long shadow it now casts on our politics now. We've got David Gawke, Richard Tice, Mary Cray and Richard Holden. David Gawke and Mary Cray, I want to come to you both in a moment in terms of what you think about how your parties have moved away from the position that was cemented in 2019. But Richard Tice, first of all, lots of discussion there about Brexit and the role that obviously played in the 2019 general election. Do you feel that as an issue, and maybe looking at your own sort of recent performances in by-elections and the rest, has Brexit as an issue slipped off the agenda in the past 2 years?
I think the first thing to say about the 19 election was there was a huge fatigue with Brexit, with politics, with the division, with the angst. And in a sense, I guess that's what the slogan was. It was, get Brexit done. And, you know, that was definitely where I think a lot of people were, and just get this behind us and try and move forward. And then, of course, you know, COVID thumped the nation and the world so quickly afterwards. And in a sense, trade relations with between two countries or between a trading bloc like the EU and the UK, they're never static. They're always evolving. And in a sense, ours with the EU will continue to evolve. And there are things that are far from perfect, as we all know. And we said at the time, in terms of Northern Ireland and fishing and such. But I think that actually, in a sense, COVID and how we recover from that and the challenges facing the government and the challenges facing the Prime Minister, frankly, far outweigh the issues of Brexit. They really do. And, you know, we've got a state now where we've got a nation with the highest taxes for 70 years, the lowest growth forecast for 60 years. Mm-hmm. And I coined a new word called consocialism, which is actually where I think it's at. And bizarrely, although Boris sort of may have been seen to be leading a party that might have shifted a bit more to the right, I actually think it's gone towards the left, where it's now it's not far from the Labour Party. It's the party of high tax and high regulation and nanny state. And who'd have thought it?
Well, on that point, I mean, David Gawke, I'm not sure you necessarily characterise it with those words that Richard Tice used. But looking at how the party has transformed in the past 2 years under Boris Johnson, I mean, scandals in the papers that we can see in front of us at the moment aside, has the party drifted back to being more something which, on policy, it is a David Gawke party?
No, I don't think it has. I think what's happened is that it's, if you like, it's moved to the right on cultural issues, so on Brexit and on immigration and the war on the woke and what have you. Actually, I agree quite to some extent with Chip Tice in terms of economic.
Someone write that down. Clip that up. Save it.
It's shock exclusive. But I think he's right in terms of economically, it's a less fiscally conservative government than the ones I was part of. They are raising taxes. My own view was that spending was going to have to increase and taxes were going to have to increase in any event. But they have, you know, they've done this in quite a business unfriendly way. They've gone for corporation tax rates. I don't think there's been a focus on spending money wisely as perhaps there should have been. So I think it has evolved further in the direction to some extent of a sort of English nationalist party. And you know, that reflects, I think, the changing alignment of British politics. I think they're going where quite a lot of their voters are. Where I think it leaves a bit of a gap in the market is for sort of, you know, moderate, internationalist-minded, pro-business voters. And I don't think there's particularly an option for voters of that sort.
But, well, let's get Richard Holden's reaction to that as being a current sitting Conservative MP. Is that right, what David was saying there, Richard, in terms of the Tories turning into more of an English nationalist party?
No, I mean, well, it's demonstrably untrue from the 2019 election result, where we did really well in Wales, for example. And it's also demonstrably untrue from the local elections that happened earlier this year, too, where, you know, and we're picking up seats all over the shop. I want to challenge a little bit of what's been said. I think we have faced over the last 2 years, not just us, but, you know, around the world, this unprecedented global pandemic. And we had two choices then. One of them was to support jobs in the economy, which we were able to do because we'd taken some pretty difficult decisions after Labour crashed the economy back in the late 2000s. Or we could have not supported the economy. I think the supporting people in jobs was exactly the right thing to do. You know, furlough scheme, grants for local businesses, which is why we've seen, you know, more people in employment today than we had before. But we have to have, that has to be allied to fiscal responsibility in the long term. And that means, you know, not living beyond our means, not borrowing for day-to-day spending, taxing to enable to deliver the public services we want and to also pay down the debt we've accrued through the pandemic.
Mary Craig, what about, well, I guess the same question for you that I asked David Gawke, but with regards to the Labour Party. Since 2019, if you take a snapshot of the party then, has it now, at time of speaking, moved more into a party that you could be fully a part of again?
Without a doubt, the front bench now looks like a government in waiting. Let's not forget that Keir Starmer was still not the leader of the party. He hadn't actually been formally elected when the country went into lockdown. And I disagree with Richard Tice. I think that this Conservative government had no choice but to do what they did in the face of a global pandemic. It's not socialism. In the same way as the last Labour government had no choice but to prop up the banking sector in the face of the global financial crash, in the risk of contagion of the banks falling over and people losing their life savings. So, you know, both governments have faced huge issues. There is no doubt with the recent reshuffle that Keir Starmer has promoted some of the best communicators, some of the deepest thinkers in the party, people like Bridget Phillipson, Wes Streeting, Peter Kyle, Yvette Cooper, all now back on the front bench. And I think he is now getting into his stride as a leader. We saw that at PMQs yesterday, hammering the Prime Minister on whether it's week after week with COVID contracts for cronies, the ability, you know, his attempt to try and get Owen Paterson off the hook, And today we hear there's issues now with potentially the Prime Minister lying to his own standards advisor. The character of the Prime Minister sets the character for the government. And I think when people go to the polls next time round, whether that's 23, 24, whether Boris Johnson is in charge, they will look at the character of who is in charge. And there is no doubt that Keir Starmer, with his record as chief prosecutor at the Crown Prosecution Service, strikes a very, very different type, is a very different type of man to Boris Johnson.
I'm wondering how much you all think that what happened in 2019 was a sort of concrete realignment in British politics, and how much it was a one-off, the Brexit issue came in and people voted in ways they wouldn't really do normally. And then when we come back to 2023, 2024, things actually might revert back to a more sort of 2015, 2017 shaped electorate. And Richard Tice, what's your view on this? Did things in 2019 actually fundamentally set things on a different course, which will continue?
Well, it clearly changed the course of the history of the country and the future of the country. But I think also for individuals, many people, for the first time in their lives, they lent their vote to a different party. And I think they found that, they found that some people found it difficult, some people found it easy. But that in itself is a real thing, because the moment you start lending your votes around, then you realise actually you've got more power to change things. And so people may leave it where they lent it to, or they might take it back, or they might lend it somewhere else. And that, I think, is a sort of really significant thing across the country that people shouldn't underestimate. Whoever's leading whichever parties into the next election, I think the electorate is more mobile in where it places its vote, including, let's not forget, the many young people who didn't vote in 2019, who will, of course, be voting at the next general election.
David Gawke, what's your view on this? How fluid an electorate do you think we now have because of 2019?
I think 2019 accelerated a process that was going on for some years, and I agree with Richard Holden's points. Places like Northwest Durham, this had been building up. I think we're switching from the politics of economics and class, if you like, much more towards the politics of culture and education and so on. And that, I think, in the short term benefits the Conservatives against a more divided opposition. In the long term, as a country, as we become perhaps more socially liberal, better educated and so on, I think the Conservatives might find themselves on the wrong side of some really important arguments.
And Richard Holder, what do you think about this? And I guess throwing into the mix with that, Boris Johnson's own leadership. You were somebody who benefited from Boris Johnson's winning power, as people always refer to it as. Lots of people, some commentators suggest, lent their vote to him in 2019 because they thought he could get Brexit done. Do you think that could be undone in 2023, 2024, whenever it happens next?
Quite a few questions there.
Quite a few.
And I think, go back to the, is this a broader realignment? Yeah. You only need to look at the, I think Richard stood in 2019 and came third in, which was Hartlepool, which the Conservatives now hold after the by-election there. So you can see that there is still potential movement. I'd say that looking around the County Durham and other parts of the northeast and northwest, that there is perhaps even further progress to be made there for the Conservatives. But that's going to be very much based on, and I actually think the Prime Minister made the point when he came to Sedgefield and I was there the day after the election. And that was that, people, I think, did, hesitate. This was the sort of, are we really doing the right thing? We're possibly breaking with generations of voting here. And people did, in some parts, lend their votes to the Conservatives, give us a try. And I think a lot of it's going to be around delivery, combination of things, delivery from the government, which I think has been, we have done Brexit stuff, which has been good and repay some of that trust. I think also stepping up during the COVID pandemic has been widely acknowledged as well. But I think also on an individual MP by MP basis, I think a lot of parts of the country had seen, and I wouldn't say Mary was one of these people at all, actually, but had seen in a degree absentee Labour MPs in some parts of the country. And they're now seeing very, very active local Conservative MPs campaigning on the doorstep in a different way to think that they've been used to politics in what had been regarded, seats like mine and Sedgefield, held with massive Labour majorities in the 80s and 90s. and no longer. And I think they're so I think there'll be lots of different things that play into that, but I think they'll want to see the local MPs delivering and also the government delivering for the country in order for them to give us their votes again.
Mary Craig, just very briefly, in terms of looking ahead, it's Keir Starmer talking to The Telegraph today about, well, all talking about in terms of Downing Street parties and the rest, said, quote, "I'm confident we're going to win the next general election, whether that's in 2023 or 2024. As the way things are going, is he right?
The polls are certainly moving in Labour's direction. There's no grounds for complacency. And I think they've been, you know, moving against parties of the left across Europe since the financial crash. The question is the pendulum swinging back? That very much depends on whether it's Boris Johnson who is leading the Conservatives, in which case Labour, I'm sure, will be looking at his record on breaking the pensions triple locks, introducing a new social care tax, failing to deliver the £15 billion education catch-up plan, or whether it's a fresh face. And the Conservative Party have a reputation for ruthlessness when it comes to replacing leaders that are no longer an electoral advantage to them. So I don't think we'll be fighting the next election against Johnson after the last couple of weeks. But I don't think, so I think there's no room for complacency in the Labour Party. But I hope that the process of reform that is going on under Keir, and which is making really big inroads in terms of winning back people's trust in those seats that we lost, means that we will see the pendulum swinging back our way.
Good to talk to you all. Thank you so much for your time this morning, taking us right back from 2019 all the way to the present day. Mary Craig, Richard Tice and David Gawke. Richard Holden, the current Conservative MP for North West Durham, I just wonder, while we've got you as a sort of interesting 29 intake person, I should ask you briefly about the situation which is concerning us all today, about the Prime Minister and his leadership. Do you worry that the Prime Minister lied to his ministerial standards advisor over what he knew about who was paying for the flat refurb in number 11?
No, I'm not. I don't worry about that. I'm sure the Prime Minister was clear with them. I do think that we are at the moment diving into issues which, you know, my constituents are really concerned about: jobs, the economy, getting the NHS waiting list down. That's why I voted for more money for the NHS not that long ago. That's what I want to be concentrating on. I think that's what my constituents want to be concentrating on, and delivering those things, such as, you know, and that broader levelling up for the people, which, you know, I was elected on in 2019, and that's what I want to see delivered. That's what I'm doing here, fighting on the ground in North West Durham, fighting to deliver. And, you know, and that's what I want to be concentrating on.
You mentioned all those other issues. What about COVID? Are you going to be one of these potentially more than 50 Tory MPs who's going to vote against the plans for Plan B in England?
Well, what concerned me is I don't want to see any form of mandatory vaccination. I don't think that'd be right. So I'm glad that the government's listened to backbenchers and said that you can either have a vaccine or a lateral flow test. So that's been a really important change for me from what had previously been suggested.
So you are going to vote from Tuesday.
So at the moment, that's where I am. But I will continue to have discussions, because one of the biggest things, I've just been to a primary school in my constituency. Some of those kids who were out of school for a couple of years, I've just employed a new researcher in my parliamentary office, you know, who needs to have that somebody with him one-on-one, you know, to enable him to really get that knowledge and, you know, in order to do the job really well. And I don't want to see more restrictions. What I'm hopeful for, and I think the entire country's hopeful for, is that this is a cautious approach, which we can, you know, fingers crossed, the Omicron variant isn't as bad as we'd all feared. And then we can look at these restrictions again in early January. So as long as it's a temporary and cautious measure, it will be supporting the government.
Right, I'm basically almost home now. Thank you very much for downloading. I've been Luke Jones, sitting in for Matt all this week. You can find me on Twitter at LukeJones03 if you are so interested. Matt will be back on Monday, so make sure you subscribe so you can get him up your podcast app when he returns. Goodbye.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth.
Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.